Welcome to Standing on the North Bank, the Swansea City podcast from Wales Online.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Standing on the North Bank. This is a Wales Online production. My name is Matt Davis. Today, joined with Ian Mitchell and guest pundit Ben James.
Hello, how are you?
Welcome, Ben.
Good to see you both. Only one place to start, deadline day. To be honest, Mitch, a relatively straightforward day for Swansea. We don't often say that there was, it was relatively serene, really. There was no real chaos, which is unlike, really, the way they were a year ago.
Yeah, it's by far and away the quietest deadline day I've covered since I've been here. So I've been here 3 years now, and let's be honest, you have no deals officially done, which was a positive in many ways because it shows that they got the bulk of the business done in time. Obviously losing the likes of Dan James, Ollie McBurney, massive blows, but there was a plan in place. We've spoken about that this week, and you know the deals have been done. They've got the cover in all positions as well, you know, not just the attack, you know, at the back they've brought in Ben Wilmot and Jake Bidwell, even the goalkeeper situation as well. So they've addressed what they needed to, and it meant a relatively stress-free deadline day, which is, you know, music to the ears of the fans, because let's be honest, rewind to even to January, that was horrific for the fans with the players who were leaving and the ones who nearly did leave as well. So yeah, it was encouraging, wasn't it?
We don't often associate Swansea with calm days on actual deadline day. January gone, there was a flurry of deals, wasn't there? It was like three outgoings, was it, on January?
Yeah, Wilf, Tom, Caroline, Montero, and then obviously Leroy Fur and Dan James almost went as well, and they got kept back at the last minute, or it was even later than the last minute, wasn't it? So,
and previous summer, that was, well,
tough.
Well, yeah. How many went out then? I think
lost count.
Yeah, well, it was just a just an incredible number that went out, and there's so much upheaval. But now, as you said, there seems to be some sort of plan in place.
Yeah, it's been a lot more structured. I mean, you know, losing Graham Potter was a big blow early this summer, and it was one of the events that was unexpected this summer. You know, a lot of members of staff have lost their jobs, they've been made redundant, and a lot have taken voluntary redundancies as well. Players, we always knew Dan James was going to leave. Ollie McBurney, there was always a chance, but we probably didn't expect it, and you know that's happened as well. So, but the one that they could never really have planned for at the time, as Trevor Birch said, you know, he'd only been in a month, and Graham Potter's already out the door after one season. So, but even with all of that, they've still got by. They've appointed Steve Cooper. You know, a lengthy process. They brought him in, he himself, and you know Trevor Birch, and you know, obviously Leon Britton and Alan Curtis have played a big role as well. They brought in their staff. And then they've identified the players, and like I said, it's all been done in a calm manner and in plenty of time as well, which is probably the key, I think, this summer.
That's the thing, isn't it? If you look on paper at this summer, you'd say it's been a dreadful summer, because you've lost Graham Potter, you've lost Ollie McBurney, you've lost Dan James. The club has kept Andre Ayew, Borja Bastón, Jeff Montero. If you look at that purely on paper, you'd think, oh wow, that's been a, you know, 4 months ago, you'd say that's a dreadful summer for the Swans.
Totally.
But it's just the fact that they've managed to sort of take all those sort of on the chin and deal with it early. Like obviously Potter leaving literally, you know, at the end of sort of last season helped, because it gave the Swans time to prepare. Same with Dan James, you know, barely the international window, wasn't it, that he'd gone.
Yeah.
Even Ollie McBurney, even if it was relatively late in the window, there was still enough time for the club to sort of deal with it. And that's the real positive, I think, for the Swans, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
Totally. So there was a plan in place. They probably knew that McBurney was going to go. That's why then a couple of attacking options were lined up. And I think that goes to show that that everything wasn't left completely to the last minute. It brings us on nicely to our next point. We're going to talk about the six incomings now. And I'd quite like to get your opinions on who are you most excited about for the season ahead? And we obviously haven't seen much of any of them so far, but there's certainly potential with all of them, really.
Yeah, I mean, they had all four in the squad against Hull. Three of them got game time, two of them started in Jake Bidwell and Freddie Woodman. Since then, we have Surridge, Aldo Kalulu, so it'll be interesting to see what they bring. You know, they're quite exciting additions in some ways. People don't know too much about them because they are young and they're not exactly fully experienced. You know, Kalulu to an extent is, and obviously Bidwell is, but the others, you know, there are a lot of young players in there. So, but to answer your question, I'm really looking forward to seeing how Christopher Peterson gets on. I've spoken to quite a few Liverpool fans about his time when he was in their academy. Never played for the first team up there, and he's forged a career abroad in Holland mainly, and he's come from Heracles this summer. And in the 20 minutes or so he had against Hull, he looks exciting. You know, he's got a bit about him. He's quite clever, and he's got a trick in him as well. So, yeah, I can't wait to see how he gets on.
I think I saw quite a few fans on social media commenting about Bidwell and him putting in a particularly... put a tackle in, which was very well appreciated by the members of the people sitting in the East Stand.
Yeah, I'm sure I think I mentioned this on last week's pod as well, but I spoke to people at some of his former clubs, and they said he loves a challenge. You know, he's erratic in some ways, but at the same time that can get you going and get you fired up as players and as fans. So in the football pools pick as well, I actually had him to be booked and he did, so that was quite nice. But as well as getting the score right, by the way, you can have that one for free. But no, he's a wholehearted player, I think. You know, he's very much a steady Eddie, and let's be honest, that was a problem position, left back with Martin Olsen being released. So yeah, that's another tick in the box for him, and the way the club filled that role, I suppose.
Because his deliveries were sort of well received on Twitter, at least I saw on Twitter. So, you know, he got forward a couple of times and put some decent balls to the box, which is another sort of pleasing aspect, isn't it?
He had a few, yeah. I mean, it took him time to get in to the game. I mean, it didn't help having Bersant Salina out on the left. You know, we know he's best at the number 10, but obviously he wanted to play George Byers, so he had to play him further up with Jay Fulton sitting next to Matty Grimes. So I think that took a bit of time. Bersant Salina grew into the game in the second half, and it did help Jake Bidwell as the game went on, and we could see, you know, he gets up well, and he was, you know, like you say, he loves a tackle at the back. He was solid defensively, so yeah, it was an encouraging debut. You know, it wasn't incredible, you know, you're not going to rave about it, but it's going to take him time, because let's be honest, it's a different style to maybe what he's been used to at QPR, isn't it?
He certainly got on, bombed on quite well against Atalanta when I was there for pre-season. Quite interested about the goalkeeping situation. I mean,
yeah, it's very. We've spoken about this a lot since Freddie Woodman's come in, and you know, I must admit, I did feel that he was going to play last week, and I picked him in the team that we selected before the game, and that was the case, fortunately. And I think that's it now. I think that's a sign that he is going to be the first choice. Nordfeldt, he was the sub keeper. So where does that leave Erwin Mulder? Obviously, Stephen Bender's injured at the moment, so you know, we have to take that as it comes. You know, when he's back, does he get a slot in the squad? We don't know. So let's not forget.
Was it a surprise, really, that maybe one of the keepers didn't go yesterday? I mean, they could still go to teams on the continent.
That's it, yeah. I was just going to come to that point, obviously, because you know, there's still, what, 3-4 weeks where they could go abroad. So, but you know, let's be honest, there is a possibility that certainly one of them could go. You know, it would be Erwin Mulder or Christopher Nordfeldt, because they're in the final years of the contract. Stephen Bender's just had a new deal. Obviously, Woodman's coming here with a promise of regular football. So, yeah, I wouldn't rule it out, one of them leaving.
Everyone else has had their say on the goalkeeping debate. Ben, might as well chip in with your 10 pence worth as well.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think we always got that from the initial quotes, didn't we, from when he first signed. It was that he's here to play first-team football. So, yeah, it always looked like he was sort of going to start against Hull. And, you know, it's interesting you say that, you know, you've got two goalkeepers there with a year left on their contract. Obviously, Woodman's alone, and he's well thought of in Newcastle. So he's not sticking around, is he? I can't see that happening. I think he'd probably head back to sort of Tyneside afterwards. Then you are. It's interesting how the Swans play this with two of them with a year left on their contracts.
Well, Margotson hasn't been in position particularly long, but he's obviously made quite a big judgment call on the two keepers who were vying for the number one shirt last season.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was an area for concern last season. You know, Nordfeldt, his football ability is great. You know, playing out from the back, he suited that. But, you know, your heart was in your mouth nearly every time he got on the ball. Under the high ball, he was alarming at times. You know, he cost them a few goals as well, which, you know, mistakes are going to happen when you're in transition. So it's not just him. That will happen with any goalkeeper. But, yeah, I think, and you know, in fairness to the goalkeepers, Lee Trundle made a very fair point where he said they weren't getting regular game time for, you know, a good 6-7 months. You know, I think Mulder had a good spell and then he got swapped. And obviously the injury, Nordfeldt started the season and then ended it. So, you know, you need to keep your faith in your goalkeeper. If they make a mistake, stick by them, or if not, you change it and you stick with that decision. So that certainly didn't help. And you'd like to think with Woodman, as young as he is, that he will get that back in, which personally I think he will.
I hope so, because I think that's what you need to do with your goalkeeper. Completely agree with what Truns was saying, really, that you need to have keep faith, because if he makes a mistake, he doesn't want to be thinking, oh, I'm out of the team now for weeks on end until I can earn my place back. Ben, any of the others? Players that you are particularly intrigued by? I mean,
it'd be interesting to see how sort of Aldo Kalulu and Sam Sturridge sort of get on, because we've had a look at the stats when it comes to Kalulu, and maybe his sort of strike rate in Basel doesn't give the best impression, but you know, I mean, was it 17 appearances, no goals? But then you know, obviously that's in terms of a forward's currency, that doesn't look great, but You do wonder what he sort of brought to the Basel team, and you know, I think he's got a little knack of skipping a club, isn't it? He used to score for Lyon, then he went to Rennes, went without a goal. Was it Sochaux?
I think he scored 11 in 30 odd.
Went to Basel, so you're hoping that Swansea will be his the alternate.
Yes, in mitigation for him, I suppose those 17 appearances. I think a lot of them were as a sub for Basel. And he's not an out-and-out number nine either. You know, he can play out wide, he can play behind a striker, so it's not like he is a direct replacement for...
That's going to be the other interesting fact, is to see where the Swans use him, isn't it?
Yeah, we were trying to figure this out all week, and, you know, I doubt it'll be as a number nine. I think Sam Surridge is that man, and if it's not him, it'll be Borja. So, yeah, I'd imagine it'll be out wide or just behind the striker, I'd suspect. But on Kalulu, speaking to people at the club who've watched him train, and he's in terms of his pace, he's not too far off Dan James by all accounts, so quite exciting addition. He's only 23 as well, still a young man, so he's got plenty of room to develop, and of course Swansea have got an option to buy him at the end of his loan, so
yeah, he'll definitely be one to watch, really. Got written down here, is the squad strong enough to mount a top half or a playoff push? It's the squad, what we think is pretty much finalised now. We might obviously see we're likely to see Montero go to Birmingham at some point, either today, unless the deal falls down. AU as well. We've obviously trailed this. They obviously want to get him off the books. It's difficult to say. I suppose I'm probably answering my own question here. Difficult to say if they have got a decent enough squad until we see these players who have come in and what sort of impact they can have.
Yeah, 100%. I think they deserve time to settle in and you know, have their stamp on things, really. But the one key word for me is goals. You know, who in that team is going to be getting... Is there going to be a 15-season striker? Is that going to be Surridge? Is it going to be Borja? Is there... You know, who's the midfielder that's going to chip in with, you know, 8, 9, 10 goals? Is Salina going to be that man? Kalulu, Peterson, or even someone like Wayne Routledge. You know, he scored 5 last season, and bear in mind, he missed a hefty chunk as well, so... Yeah, if one of the new recruits is one of those who does get, you know, 15 to 20, you know, maybe not as much as Ollie McBurney last year with 24, but close to that tally, then of course they've got a great chance of building on what they did and being in and around the top six or maybe just below it. But without those big volume of goals, it's going to be tough. But yeah, I think it all hinges on that, and you know, that time will tell on that. We can't say at the moment, can we?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think you look at the sort of the squad last year, it was very much all on Ollie's shoulders, with sort of only Baker Richardson behind him. This current squad probably has the potential to sort of provide goals for more areas. It's just we don't know whether a lot of these new areas can sort of provide goals in the Championship. Your Kalulu, Surridge, you know, Pedersen. It's just so many sort of new variables now that we just, if they all do sort of take the Championship life well, you know, maybe Swans have got a bit more sort of depth and variety where they didn't last year, because it was very much a case of if Ollie McBurney was, you know, less than 50%, which he very often was, sort of close to that,
he was absent through illness for three or four.
He'd
been playing for a lot of the season with a, was it a cracked shin? Broken toe, wasn't it?
And obviously he had his illness as well, and you know, a lot of problems, and he still returned 24 goals for you know, so it shows you how well he did and how sorely he's going to be missed. So, but yeah, no, like I said, if they do settle in well, these new boys, then Swansea could easily go under the radar, couldn't they? You know, a bit like they did to an extent last season, where, you know, they finished the season really well. At home, they were outstanding. We saw a bit of that against Hull, you know, but I think they were lacking up top in the final third in long spells of that whole game, but they did slowly start to improve. And you know, let's forget it's a new head coach in, new method, so it will take time. But yeah, they could easily go under the radar, couldn't they? In a positive way.
Yeah. We touched on it already, but could you just give us like the latest or the Swansea stance on AU Borja and Jeff? What the current situation is with them?
Yeah, if you'd have asked this 3 weeks ago, it'd have been a straight answer. They'd want to offload all three. I mean, the case is probably still the same with all three. At the time of recording, Montero is still a Swansea player. He's in the last year of his contract, but quite literally on deadline, on the Thursday, we heard that he was set to join Birmingham on loan. That's not gone through. We're still waiting confirmation, so by the time this goes out, it could well be done, but we don't know the latest on that yet. But obviously Swansea are keen to get him off the books, as is the case with Borja and Andre Ayew. However, with those two, they are now Swansea players. Steve Cooper is going to consider them this season. Borja, we've obviously seen, he's already scored, come back in his first game in over 2 years against Hull, whereas Andre Ayew, of course, he had a tricky spell at Fenerbahce last season. So, but for a man they signed for £18 million, you know, if he's in your ranks, why not use him? So I think that's the stance. Fingers crossed they can still offload him because he's on hefty wages, as is Borja. But if they can't find him, then it's encouraging that they're going to be playing a part. And, you know, if they're not disruptive or there's no injury issues, then, you know, there's two strikers in the ranks there. So that's the latest at the moment. Obviously, with them, Montero could change.
I mean, Ayew, really, if he was to play in this division, would absolutely tear it up.
Yeah, you'd like to think so, wouldn't you? Yeah, you'd like to think the same with Borja, to be honest, wouldn't you? But yeah. I know he got the goal on Saturday, but he wasn't by all accounts brilliant, was he?
No, he was. Yeah, there was a few signs of rustiness, but you know, like I say, somebody like him, it might just be a confidence thing. Getting a goal, you can see the way he celebrated it. Even the one in pre-season, you know, we were talking about this just before recording. So, yeah, you just hope that he can show a little bit more, whereas Andre Ayew is definitely a more rounded striker, isn't he? You know, he's got the Premier League experience, not just with Swansea, but West Ham as well. So, yeah, they're not bad options to have, which, let's be honest, we never would have... It was unthinkable even, what, 2-3 weeks ago, isn't it? So,
yeah, in theory, they could, as I said yesterday, have a strike force, one £18 million man, and another one who's £15 million, which not many Championship sides could boast. But it's,
I'm just trying to process that. Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah.
We touched on it again there. We haven't really looked at the whole game. It seems like an age ago, even though it's obviously less than a week. A quick sort of summary of it, Mitch. I've got written down here, good response after an early, well, very early setback. Yeah. I didn't even sat down on my seat.
Yeah, that sums it up, really. I mean, it was a bit of a scruffy goal to concede. I think it was Grzycki had a shot and there was a little flick from Daniel Batty. Well, still dubious whether it was a flick, but it went down as his goal. He claimed it. So, but, you know, credit to Swansea. I still thought they controlled that first half, but there was just no penetration. Final third, as I mentioned, there was just a lack of cutting edge. And you could see the fans were just starting to get a bit frustrated at half-time. There was a few grumbles and, you know, whatever Steve Cooper said at half-time, it did the trick because they came out, went straight at Hull. Two goals in, what is it, 100-odd seconds. That certainly helps. And the place was bouncing after that. And, you know, they just grew in confidence, the players. Matty Grimes, he was sublime in the second half. Jay Fulton, I thought, had a very good game. There's, you know, some really good performances. Van der Hoorn, another one. And in fairness, Freddie Woodman had very little to do other than pick the ball out of his net in the third minute. So there's a little bit of a barrage late on, but, you know, they survived that well. And I think it was encouraging because, let's be honest, it's still early days. So to be able to do that, show that type of character and get the win, that's massively encouraging going into what's going to be a tough game against Derby.
What did you make of Steve Cooper's sort of process during the game? Because obviously when you had Graham Potter there, if you know, something wasn't going sort of well or they'd fallen behind in the first half, Potter wasn't afraid to sort of start changing things around mid-match. You know, he loved sort of changing the tactics. What was Cooper like in terms of responding to that?
It was interesting because obviously personnel-wise he didn't change anything at the break, which, you know, a lot of managers don't. He persisted with what he had and I think he just told them to up the tempo a bit more. Pressing is something that he wants to do a lot more, and, you know, out of possession, you've really got to win that ball back quickly, and, you know, a lot of energy and hard work. And I just think they really upped the tempo in that second half, pressed from the front, and they just didn't give Hull time on the ball. It made a massive difference because it meant they were playing on the front foot, and also they had possession. I think at half time they had something like 68-69% of the ball, and they didn't look like scoring, and yet in the second half they had something similar. But you know, they were creating chances all of a sudden. So yeah, it was, I think it was just a few words of saying, you know, be brave on the ball. As I said, Grimes, he was more and more confident as that game wore on. A few really nice touches and passes. He did have a really wobbly one just before half time where they could have gone 2-0 down, but you know, mistakes are going to happen with this young squad. But it was good to see that Cooper was able to have that influence on them at half time, and they took it on board and they were able to change, and at that tempo, because let's be honest, they were, could have been 3 or 4-1, and I think it would have been a much easier afternoon's work. But they couldn't get that third goal, which made it a bit nervous at the end. But you know, it's still a win from behind, which is superb way to start the season, isn't it?
Yeah, facing Derby then tomorrow. I watched them against Huddersfield on TV the other night. I was quite impressed by them. Did you see any of that bit?
Yeah, saw bits of it. Yeah, they did look impressive. Obviously, Huddersfield coming down from the Premier League. Is it the first time that we've seen all three relegated
ever,
Premier
yeah.
League teams lose?
Apparently so, yeah.
You know, there was one game in Wigan as well, which I don't think we'll mention, but that was enjoyable.
You can come again then.
But yeah, you know, Derby looked good. No longer Frank Lampard's Derby, as Sky Sports about to change the name. But yeah, really impressive. You know, you consider that they lost Mason Mount, they lost Harry Wilson, both sort of lone players from the Premier League, top end of the Premier League, really, clubs. That was always going to be a big thing. But you know, Tom Lawrence really took the mantle on the other night, didn't he? I've always been fairly sort of critical of Tom Lawrence. I sort of see him as being sort of a bit like Andros Townsend, in that I think he's got some levels of quality there, and he clearly does. I always feel he doesn't always quite deliver when he should. I know that's a sort of a view that a lot of people sort of in the Welsh media and beyond think, but when it does click, he has got the ability to produce moments of magic, because the first goal was brilliant, second goal was brilliant. You know, he could have had a hat trick that night, and it would have been well deserved, and they were all just moments of little bits of magic, really, and that's something that the Swansea are going to have to sort of deal with.
Yeah.
Although knowing that, it'll probably be dreadful as well.
I'll say, I hope he's got the goals out of his system, but no, they were two lovely finishes, and he showed what he's capable of. You know, he's a Wales international, he's obviously rated highly by Derby. But you know, new manager, it's a chance for him to become their star man now, with Wilson and Mason Mount going, as Ben said. So, but you know, there's a few other players in there. You know, Bogle, I think he's a wonderful fullback. Martin Waghorn, he didn't look like scoring against Huddersfield, but what a vital player he is.
Yeah.
You know, linking up the play, holding up the ball, winning free kicks, endless running. You know, that type of player. It's a dream for people like Tom Lawrence to have someone like
yeah.
him in your team. So, yeah, there's a lot for Swansea to be wary of, and you know, but I do expect quite an open game. We could see a lot of goals
yeah.
with the way both teams play. They, you know, quite similar approaches in terms of attack-minded. So, yeah, it's going to be hopefully an exciting game.
We'll finish on team news, Mitch. Tom Carroll?
Yeah, so he's back in first-team training, which is great news for him, obviously having hip surgery earlier this year. Obviously, he's not involved at Derby. He's still got, I think it's going to be around 3-4 weeks of stepping up, getting back to full fitness, but you know, he's back on the grass with the first team players, so that's hugely encouraging for him. But elsewhere, it's a full clean bill of health. Wayne Routledge back after missing last week, so
yeah,
that's another boost and another headache for Steve Cooper.
Well, exactly. If everyone's available, it's going to be really interesting to see how he lines them up. I do think that. I don't know if, well, you know, what's, if he's going to deploy a different system away from home. I say it's almost feeling our way around the dark a little bit with Cooper,
yeah.
because obviously this is his debut campaign managing at this level.
Yeah, definitely. But you think, you go back to last season, I mean, Graham Potter didn't name an unchanged team
yeah.
until, I think it was at Preston in January, or it might be in the Aston Villa Cup game. It was those were the two. And then obviously he had a settled side, and that's what, you know, they played some of the best football in that second half of the season. So Steve Cooper might be similar. We might see changes every week, or we might see, you know, just the odd one here and there. But I can't see him changing too much. I think he'll go with the same goalkeeper, back four. Grimes will obviously start, Salina. So I think, you know, you talk about 7 or 8 where you know already, but then it's just the case of, does he go with Surridge up top, which personally I think he will. Christopher Peterson, does he start, or does Routledge come in? And then, you know, you're talking maybe Kalulu or someone else. Does Nathan Dyer stay on the right? But the bulk of it, I think you can pick. But yeah, there's going to be, I think there'll be one, maybe two surprises.
It certainly gives us plenty to talk about. I think that's probably a good place to wrap it up. we've got two games to talk about next week as well, won't we? We'll have obviously Derby and they play Tuesday night against
Northampton in the Carabao Cup. It's back already.
Well, that's, we could see players like Dander and Soro there. You'd have thought maybe change at the back, probably a most definite change goalkeeper, most probably maybe seeing Kean Harries playing.
Yeah, hopefully you see some of them youngsters. You know, I think Steve Cooper was very happy with Kean Harries and, you know, Brandon Cooper as well, two centre backs. Ben Wilmot, we've not seen him yet. You know, it's only had one game, but fingers crossed he'll get a run out there. So yeah, it's going to be a good chance to see some of the fringe players and see what they can do.
Excellent. Okay. Well, thanks, gents.
Cheers all.
We'll speak to you next week.